Post Tribune Radio is on the air. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. On this edition of PTR, we take a look at the activist organization that produces this radio program to find out why we are the League of Revolutionaries for a New America.
We're entering in a whole new world, and I don't think that people, even the revolutionaries, really understand the significance of entering a new world. That means that you got to forget about the old world. You got to concentrate on how do I get a hold of and remake, or I should say shape, this new world in my benefit. And this is what the League is all about. The League isn't about regaining what's been lost by the development of these new means of production. The League is about how do we make the emerging world serve the interests of the masses of the people.
People's Tribune Radio is produced by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, who also published the newspaper People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo. Stay tuned for contact and ordering information at the end of the program. Some 10 years ago, a group of revolutionaries banded together to form a new organization. These revolutionaries banded together because they saw that something new was happening, something that was going to fundamentally change society forever. This fundamental change in society was being caused by the creation of a new class of workers who were being displaced from the capitalist system as a result of the increasing use of computerization and robotics. This fundamental and irreversible change in the means of production meant the eventual destruction of the capitalist economic system. With workers being replaced by robots, the delicate web of buying and selling that makes up the capitalist system was being torn asunder. This class can no longer get its needs met within the capitalist system, and when ready, can be rallied into a movement to press for a cooperative society. But as always, with great opportunity comes the possibility of great danger. The ruling capitalist class sees the destruction of the current economic system as well. And in order to protect their interest at all cost, they too will attempt to reorganize society, not around cooperation or even capitalism, but as a fascist state. Seeing this situation as it was unfolding, this group of activists and educators formed a new group, a League of Revolutionaries for a New America. One of those is Nelson Peary, who's been involved in revolutionary activities for over 60 years. Peary's authored a number of books, including Black Fire, The Making of an American Revolutionary, and The Future is Up to Us.
I was one of the founding members of the organization. A number of us understood some 10 years ago that the fundamental composition and direction of the revolutionary movement in America was beginning to change. That change wasn't because of the decline or elimination of the Soviet Union, as some people might think. It really came about through the development of a technology that was condemning more and more American workers to real poverty. For the first time in American history, a real poverty-stricken group was beginning to arise. They were demanding a life that was guaranteed by the government. They were demanding health care and education and housing and so forth. It was this understanding, recognizing that a new social force was arising in this country, that was led to the creation of the League of Revolutionaries. And yes, we joined it primarily because without such a social force, that not an ideological force, but an actual social force, it wouldn't be possible to talk in terms of change taking place in America. The League is based upon an actual situation. The foundation of the League is the reality of the change in the social conditions and economic conditions brought about by the development of electronics and the application of these electronics to the workplace, with the resultant elimination of a large number of workers from the workforce, and they have no way of getting back into that workforce, that their jobs are gone and gone forever. And I think the important thing to see with this is, which direction is it taking? Is it declining or is it advancing? Well, we have to admit that the layoffs caused by electronics, that is, downsizing caused by robotics and other forms of electronics, is very much on the increase. And what we're seeing is a whole new era of production and social relations developing. For the first time in the history of the world, we're seeing an emergence of a class of people who have no relations whatsoever to the existing economic system. So we can look forward to, as this class grows, we can look forward to greater and greater collisions between their interests and the interests of the capitalist class. Now, there's a difference between their interests and the interests of the stably employed worker. The stably employed worker and the capitalists will fight over wages. You know, one of them will say, well, I'll give you $5 an hour, and the other one says, no, I want $6 an hour, and they fight over this. But this is not the fight with these people who are increasingly outside of the social order, and certainly outside of the economic order. They're not demanding wages. They're demanding a whole way of life that's completely different from what we are used to now in the United States. So we're talking about something entirely different. We're talking not about getting people back into the social system. We're talking about the development, the progressive development of the conditions that are going to do away with the existing social system and introduce some new kind of system. And what that new kind of system is, I think, depends upon the people who participate in the struggle.
General Baker is an internationally known figure in the labor movement from his work organizing auto workers in Detroit, Michigan, and his leadership roles in the Dodge Revolutionary Union movement and the League of Revolutionary Black Workers.
Today we confront a situation where everything we fought for and won is being taken away. We are in a whole new ball game, and because we are in a whole new ball game and the system we see that we're fighting against is collapsing, we need new organizational forms to fight back, and the League of Revolutionaries for a New America is such an organization. You fight one way when a system is expanding. When it's actually collapsing in front of you, you fight another. We've lost all our homes, the communities are battered, the plants are closed, no work available. It's just a whole different ball game than what we used to fight under. I live in a little city called Highland Park that's bankrupt. The city went bankrupt last June. The state sent a receiver in and removed the mayor and the city council, and has been running under this receiver for almost a year. They laid off the entire police force, the water department, the firefighters. They've been forced to bring back a handful of firefighters, a handful of police officers. But all the services are gone. The library's closed, the recreation center's closed and boarded up. I mean, it's absurd. I mean, people are crying out for some kind of relief. We never really questioned the role of a city and all the services that came with it. You know, the protection of the kids, your little tax assessments and all this stuff. Everything's up for grabs. It's a whole new ballgame. Things are calling the question that we never believed we'd have to question before. Statistics we've been reading say almost 54% of the cities in this country are almost insolvent. The state of West Virginia only have two solvent cities. So it's just a proliferating problem. I mean, the whole core of society is being destroyed by this onslaught of capitalism under this current period and called globalization, and it's just battering us. And it's bad times and good times, right? You know, because obviously you got a chance to call into question things people never questioned before. Now you got an opportunity to talk to them about why nothing works, why the church don't work, the school board don't work, the block club don't work. None of these things, the trade union doesn't work. People want to know why these things don't work, and now we've got an opportunity to talk about the underpinnings of the system and what it's doing to us. So it's a real glorious time. At the same time, it's a difficult time.
Sherry Honkala of the Kensington Welfare Rights Union is also internationally known for her work fighting for the rights of poor and homeless people. Honkala has participated in housing takeovers as well as protests at the WTO meetings in Seattle and the Winter Olympics in Salt Lake City. A tireless advocate for the poor, Honkala travels the country speaking on the topics of human and economic rights. She spoke with People's Tribune Radio correspondent Kathy Venn.
You know, I got involved in the whole housing struggle, I'd love to say, because I woke up one day and I decided that I wanted to do good things. That's not at all what happened. What happened was that I was a homeless mother, and I was desperately seeking shelter. And at that time, all the shelters were full in the Minneapolis area. And so out of necessity, I began to take over abandoned houses. And I learned through that process that I couldn't do that alone, that I needed organization, that I needed to hook up with other people that found themselves in the exact same situation as I did.
Sherry, you were pretty young when this all happened, weren't you?
Well, the first time was when I was 16, and then later when my son was 10. I'm going to be 40, and for all of these years, this is what I've been doing, is trying to secure, first of all, my own basic necessities of life, and then trying to help other families secure those things, but also ensuring that they're just not involved in activity, but that they're conscious of the fact that there are other homeless people, that there's other hungry people, and to understand the politics of hunger, the politics of housing. And there really is no reason for anybody to be homeless in this country or to be without affordable housing or housing, period. There's more abandoned houses in Philadelphia than there are homeless people. And it's pretty much the same situation across the country. We're not talking about development issues. We live in a country where there's really an abundance. And so now we just have to figure out, how do we educate folks to understand that they have a right to these things, link them up into different forms of organization, and teach them how to reclaim these basic human rights? Any of the ideas that I've gotten have actually come from different people, whether they're different, you know, famous people throughout history that I've learned from their struggles, whether it was Gandhi or Martin Luther King, or just other members of the League of Revolutionaries for a New America. Many, many different people have influenced and helped shape my ideas. And I really stand on the shoulders of many different folks that have gone before me that have made a lot of mistakes. And I've tried to look at those mistakes, and they've had successes. And most importantly, they've taught me the importance of self-study and education to keep me going. Otherwise, there would have been many times, and actually there was many times I'd get up in the morning and I'd be like very tired and be like, oh my God, do I want to deal with, you know, another six people coming into the office today that don't have a place to sleep, and they got three kids here and four kids here. We don't have any money for a truck to move people. And if I wasn't a part of some regular ongoing self-study and collective study and was looking at the bigger picture, I would have gotten frustrated and would have quit and not continued to be involved in this process. But because I really believe that ending these kind of conditions are possible, it fills me with a great deal of hope and gives me an amazing amount of energy every day to continue to do the kind of work that I do.
General Baker.
The old structures were put under, were part of the old New Deal structure that was associated with industrial production. This industrial production that, you know, entered in the country in an earlier period, that saw the New Deal administration and safety nets put in for GA and workers' comp and the welfare system, all that's been obliterated because of new forms of production. This introduction of electronics into production has just destroyed the old infrastructure. You know, for instance, I know up in Detroit in the auto shops, we got whole departments and whole plants that used to be full of human beings and nothing but robots. In an auto factory, you go to an old paint shop or body shop. I remember at the old body shop in Dodge, Maine, we had six baseball teams, 2,000 people working in there. You go to a modern assembly body shop, there's not a human being in the entire body shop. It's just indicative of how this influx of electronics into production has affected productive process and eliminated human labor. The actual underpinnings of the capitalist system is questioned, and they're forced to run with robotics, but they're forced to sell the products wherever they can. So it leads to a global scramble, finding markets wherever they can, trying to go to other areas of cheaper production, to try to find a method of production that's cheaper than a robot. You know, so this whole global picture is opened up just on the basis of this influx of electronics into production that creates this new ballgame for us in a lot of ways. And it's At the same time, I mean, the people that used to work there are just thrown into the streets. I mean, no way to get the necessities of life. No, you know, I was thinking the other day, you know, on the May Day celebration. I mean, the American working class jumped up and fought for an eight-hour day. And they cried. It was 8 hours of work, 8 hours of recreation, 8 hours of rest. And I'd be damned, those are revolutionary cries today. You can't get 8 hours of work, hardly no place. You can't get 8 hours of rest because you ain't got a house. And 8 hours of recreation and all the facilities are closed down and shut up. There's no place to recreate at. I mean, we just got a real crisis that the class is confronted with trying to find its way out. You know, so it's a real glorious time in that sense, but it's just a difficult time of misery and stuff that we're confronted with trying to fight for a vision to see our way out of this thing. This whole notion of classes is real. It's real here in America. We have a working class in this country, and when we say working class, we mean not just those that's working, but those that don't own any means of production, no way of subsistence, you know, to get the food, shelter, and the clothing that he needs, except unless he sells his labor power to somebody. You know, so we got these huge class differences in this country, and that's what nobody wants to talk about. They want to give it an ethnic push or some other kind of push instead of talking about classes. Economic classes, a class whose labor is expropriated from him, so he doesn't have any way to meet the necessities of life unless he works for somebody. And now, since there's no opportunity to work, he's just in a mix out here trying to fight for a way to get his daily bread from begging and whatever kind of other process he can have until they organize for a fight. This class right now just fights for his daily bread, but we have an opportunity to gather the revolutionaries that's developing within this period. Believe me, everybody that's out there collapsing is thinking. Some people are thinking. They have ideas. They can't see the whole picture. And because they only see a portion of the picture, they can't see the whole system and how to fight their way out of it. It's the duty of us as revolutionaries to get amongst these people and try to paint them the picture that we're living under. Talk about the immorality of this system that has just a handful of people with all the wealth and most of us with none. Once we start doing that process, then we can look for ideas or visionaries to see how can we redivide the wealth in this country. I mean, why is so we live in a period of so much abundance that we got shortages of nothing except our ability to get what we need. And I think just by interfacing with these sections of people and having these kind of discussions, it's going to give us a situation where we can find other revolutionaries, those who can come up with visions and stuff, so we can organize ourselves together. Develop a real class outlook and a class organization based on the poverty section of society so we can begin our fight and see a way out of this thing.
Sherry Honkala.
To, you know, see little fledgling organizations get started across the country and them continue to grow. And that's what it's really about. I mean, it's not about the leader. It's about, you know, creating and helping to shape as many leaders as possible across the entire country, because that's the only way that we're going to win the housing struggle or any other struggle in this country, is if we get together the majority of the people that are struggling on a day-to-day basis or just think that it's morally wrong to have these kind of conditions. That's when we're going to change things, is when people understand that the leaders that they're looking for really are themselves.
Nelson Peary.
We have to have an organization that thinks in terms of how do we march into the future, and what is that future? So we're entering in a whole new world, and I don't think that people, even the revolutionaries, really understand the significance of entering a new world. That means that you got to forget about the old world. You got to concentrate on how do I get a hold of and remake, or I should say, shape this new world in my benefit. And this is what the League is all about. The League isn't about regaining what's been lost by the development of these new means of production. The League is about how do we make the emerging world serve the interests of the masses of the people. The new generation of radicals and revolutionaries don't have a very good grasp about what went on in history and how we got into the situation that we're in. Capitalist private property is coming to an end. There's no question about that. I mean, there's emerging all kinds of new forms of property that's not owned by any individual and all this kind of stuff. And in fact, isn't even owned by any particular national grouping. What the new forms of property will be, I'm not sure. But I do know that there's a possibility for us creating an economic world based upon collective property rather than private property. And that's what we're all about. How do we build a new America? that it's wanting a new America and having some idea how do we go about getting a new America is two completely different things.
When it comes to radio, you're tuned to one of those completely different things, People's Tribune Radio. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. We'll take a brief break for station identification. This is People's Tribune Radio, and today we're taking a look at the organization that produces this radio program, the League of Revolutionaries for a New America. Chris Mann is a writer, lecturer, and people's historian.
I joined the League when it was founded in April of 1993 here in Chicago. And the reason that I joined is that I had been involved, along with a number of other people, in different organizational efforts to create an organization of revolutionaries in the United States. And in the course of our attempts and our evaluations and especially our theoretical study, I think what we came to see is that we needed a specific kind of organization of revolutionaries for this period of history, one that would concentrate on being an organization of agitators and propagandists, that would speak to the members of what's really a new class that's developed in society as a result of the development of electronics, and would speak to the whole of society about the existence of that new class. I write for the People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo, the monthly national newspaper of the League. I speak around the country at college campuses, at house meetings, at conferences. I recently returned from Kent State University, where I attended an anti-war rally. I was one of the speakers at a rally against the war. And I also facilitate classes about the lessons of the revolutionary process in the United States for today. If you want to change the present and create a new future, you have to understand why the present is the way it is. And it is the way it is because it emerged out of the past. So in terms of understanding why is the world the way it is, you have to know its history. I think it's a little like being a soldier in war. If you're really going to be an officer in war and know how to fight battles well, you have to know something about the history of military campaigns so that you can apply the lessons. I mean, if you look at the situation today, here we have, for instance, a major attack on civil liberties in this country coming after September 11th. Now, how are we going to fight the witch hunt hysteria that's developed in this country without understanding the lessons of the Salem witch trials, without understanding the lessons of the persecution of opponents of the war during World War I or of the McCarthy period? How are we going to fight the USA Patriot Act without knowing about things that are similar to it in the past, such as the Alien and Sedition Acts? How are we going to fight the media hysteria of the mass media in this country without looking at the yellow journalism of the 1890s, of William Randolph Hearst, and how people took a stand against that? So if we want to change the world, if we want to make it different, if we want to create a new future, we have to learn from what people did in the past.
Beth Gonzalez is an organizer for the League and works out of Lerna's national office in Chicago, Illinois.
I was like a lot of other people in that it was the civil rights movement and the struggle against the U.S. war in Vietnam in the 1960s that politicized me. And like a lot of others, our passion for justice led us to study the sources of the injustice, and from there we saw the need for a revolutionary reorganization of society and the need to just get rid of the capitalist system. Well, by the late 1980s and early 1990s, it was clear that there was something else going on, that the electronic revolution was creating a new type of poverty and therefore a new type of injustice. We're all familiar with terms of working poor or the permanently unemployed, but it's clear that there was something different going on underneath the economy. And so, therefore, we could see that what was needed was a new type of organization of revolutionaries. And so about 1992, a number of organizations and individuals started talking and figuring out how we could come together, how could we bring together the greatest number of revolutionaries that were produced by that moment, produced by the new kind of poverty. And so in 1993, we came together with several hundred people, about 300 people came together to form the League. It wasn't called the League then. We had a wonderful convention and we had a great program and there was tremendous unity over everything except the name. So we just kept, for a time being, we just kept the name National Organizing Committee. But the main thing was that it was a tremendous unity of practical revolutionaries, just people active on in all walks of life, from community struggles to union struggles to broadcasters and writers and so on, musicians. And as the years went on, we got a lot more experience, and then we could see that what we needed was more of a sense of vision as the basis of the unity of these revolutionaries. So in our later conventions in 1995, 1998, 2001, just last year, we spelled out more and more clearly what our vision was, that what's needed is not just for people to be against things, but there needs to be some kind of unifying vision about what we're for, what society can be, not just how bad things are, but how we can take these wonders produced by electronics and by people, cultural creations of people and the wonderful care they can give to develop themselves and other people, and we can create an entirely different kind of society. So we needed to have some kind of common ground, some place to talk about not just what's wrong, but why, and how things can be different, and how to get from here to there. And there are all sorts of revolutionaries out there. There are rap revolutionaries and religious revolutionaries, youth and trade union activists, professors and writers. Just everywhere you look, in every section of society, there are all sorts of revolutionaries. And the League is trying to provide that kind of common ground where people can come together and talk not just about how bad things are, but how things can be different and how there can be the reorganization of society without private property, where all the wonders of society and humanity can be distributed according to need, not just according to how much money you have.
Chris Mann.
While on the one hand there is this very, very sad and ugly side to American history of slavery and of the robber barons, there is also the other side, which is this unrelenting struggle of people for justice and the fight of people with a vision of a decent future, whether it's the fight against King George III and against colonialism, the colonialism of Britain, on through the fight against slavery and the fight of the women's movement and of the trade union movement. So there's this continual fight of people for a better life. And one of the things that's important about history is just knowing about how that fight was fought, because there are tactical lessons and, I think most importantly, moral lessons that can be drawn from knowing the specifics of that history. There is no reason on earth why anyone has to be hungry, has to be homeless, has to be without medical care or without education. I mean, we have the resources today to feed, clothe, and house everyone. There's no reason why anyone has to be hungry or homeless. Finally, the good side of the American character could come out. I mean, the good side is represented in the defiance of Crispus Attucks on King Street in Boston in 1770, standing up to the British troops, and all the young men who are around him who are refusing to accept the British troops beating up a young Bostonian. You know, that defiance and refusal to kneel down, the courage of a William Lloyd Garrison opposing slavery, taking a stand against slavery when it was extremely unpopular to do that. The decency of all the people who supported the civil rights movement. I mean, all of that, if we could have a world in which those sentiments could come to the fore, and I think what that means is a world in which you don't have these 447 billionaires ruling the world. You have a cooperative society in which there's ultimately distribution according to need rather than based on profit. Then finally, the best, the very best in the American character and in humanity could finally come out.
The needs of the poor, whether English or Spanish speaking, are indistinguishable. The effects of the new economy no longer discriminate according to race. But the language barrier can be an effective block against building needed solidarity. Being a multiracial and multilingual organization, the League of Revolutionaries for a New America understands the need for a bilingual newspaper. That newspaper is called the People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo, and Laura Garcia is its longtime editor.
I joined the League because it was a natural step for me. I became politically in 1970, back in the Chicano movement and the civil rights movement, and ever since then I've always kept involved in whatever organizations have been formed in order to bring awareness and education to the American people. So my main reason for joining the League is because I know that poverty is wrong, but I know that a lot of people don't know why we're poor. The purpose of the League is to educate people around the problem, and not only educate people around the problem, but also to start that dialogue about the solution to this problem, which is a cooperative society. I come from an immigrant background, and also, my family in Mexico were campesinos, and they worked the land. And when we migrated to the United States, we continue working the fields in California. So poverty has always been a part of my life, and it's something that it's guts your soul, that it destroys you. I don't mean just physically because of malnutrition, but also spiritually. So it's something that has been part of me, and it's something that I have always tried to fight against. My vision of a new world is really a world where, and it might sound like a cliche, or it might sound like it's not possible, but a world where we're all equal, and I mean by all, I mean women, I mean African Americans, I mean white, I mean Mexicans, I mean people of all the races and colors, for us to be truly equally, and especially for us to use the resources of society, the wealth that is produced, for the well-being of our children. I think without ensuring a future for our children, the society cannot have a future.
What's the experience been like publishing a bilingual newspaper like the People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo?
It's a difficult process to put out a publication, especially, you know, trying to get the stories. We're always searching out for material for the publication. In that search for material for the publication, as members of the editorial board, we do go and cover certain events, and in doing that, I've gone to Philadelphia, for example, to cover the economic human rights. I've also been to Philadelphia during the Republican Convention and interview a number of people that were there demonstrating against what was happening at the convention. I've gone to California to interview farm workers. I've also been to Mexico to interview the presidential candidate at that time, Cuauhtemoc Cárdenas, and I've done a number of things, and I have met very interesting people, and I think in meeting those people, it really reaffirms that what we're doing, it's correct in trying to educate and bring understanding to a situation, because I have found out that we're not the only ones out there doing it, that there's a number of people that are doing the same kind of work or involved in bringing awareness and education to America.
Veterans of the struggle bring with them wisdom and experience. But for any revolution to be truly successful, it needs the hopes, dreams, aspirations, energy, and new ideas of young people. That's why Lerner recognizes that young revolutionaries like Alma Ramirez not only need to be involved in the organization, but need to be in leadership positions.
I'm a member of the steering committee and the national committee. I work for the People's Tribune, and I write for it, and also part of the board. And mainly my assignment is to the photo committee, and I participate in production. I joined the league about 6 years ago. And at the time, I was an undergrad in college, and I think I was just looking for an organization that made sense, which the League to me did. Their message about a cooperative society and just politically educating people about what their real situation is really helped me understand what my role was as a revolutionary. I was never politically involved as in high school or even in college. I met some folks that were really just great people, and they invited me to a league school. So I went unknowing of anything. I just decided to go and just spend the weekend with them. And when I left, I was convinced that there was what they were saying was right. And ever since then, I've been a part of the organization, and I don't plan on leaving it. Both my parents, you know, are immigrants from Mexico, and they came to the United States for a better life, like most immigrants do. And they were both working class, and they just really, you know, instilled in us the values of what it means to be an American. And I think that my family, my siblings, and myself just kind of followed that, but continue, you know, my father died when I was in high school, and I thought that there was something wrong with that. He died because he worked his whole life. There had to be something better for us, and it wasn't going to happen by how my parents were doing it, so it has to be something else. And so I think that's kind of where I just started searching for, there's got to be a better way to do this, to be happy. It's kind of difficult to talk to people about, because it's really, you really have to have an imagination and a vision of what kind of world you want. But when I do, I really try to make, like, have them think about what kind of world would you like to live in, and have them open up their minds to the possibilities that the League's message has to offer for the society. I work with a lot of children in and out of schools. I'm constantly visiting schools throughout different states, and I just think it's important for us to really begin to consider what kind of world we want to make for them. They have so much potential and possibilities, and it's almost like they're being neglected in a sense by this system and what it has to offer for their future. So I think it's important that from the very beginning, from the time they're, you know, enter into their homes or into their classrooms, that they begin to be given a vision of a world where children can play, can read, can be given the fruits of their parents' labor or their own, and where there's no poverty, there's no homelessness, and they have the right, for all humans, the right to education, health care, housing, clothing, food, whatever you need to sustain yourself. I often say it might not happen in my lifetime, but I'm still going to fight for it, because I know that eventually it will, and I'd like to my children or my grandchildren or great-grandchildren to know that something that I really believed in.
People involved in the League of Revolutionaries for a New America are also involved with other organizations struggling for elementary justice. Dr. Sal Sandoval practices medicine at a community and migrant health clinic in Merced, California. He's a member of Physicians for a National Health Program.
The proposal for the Physicians for a National Health Program is for universal coverage for everyone from cradle to grave. Preventative care and basic care and long-term care for everybody in the United States, regardless of their citizenship. We spend the most money of any industrialized country in the world, and we get the least for it. We have nearly 42 million people that are uninsured, and another 50 million that are underinsured in this country, and it's just getting worse. Since the debacle of President Clinton's health plan, we've seen a worsening in this country with the corporatization of health care in this country, and worsening health care for our children and for our families. Insurance companies are making medical decisions. The bottom line is really what matters now. It's not really the health of the American people. At one time, people had reasonably good jobs where they had health benefits, and that's pretty much being eroded by the economy. We're seeing many of the good jobs just disappear, and with that, the benefits. Our country ties health insurance and health benefits to having a job. If you lose your job, you're in trouble. There's always been profit as a motive in health care. What's happened is now the ones that are making the decisions are far removed from the communities. Before, the doctors didn't mind when they were in charge. The hospitals didn't mind when they were in charge. Now what's happening is insurance companies are even causing the hospitals to close, doctors to go out of business and to leave the healthcare professions, and really boiling it down to what they're going to make in terms of the profit.
Dr. Sandoval says that the corporate model of managed healthcare is really short-sighted and winds up costing everyone more in the long run.
We're seeing people that have conditions that could be prevented, having catastrophic illnesses like heart attacks, dying of cancer, strokes, because they didn't get preventative care in time or didn't get medications in time. Seeing children with diseases that could be prevented with immunizations that are getting these diseases. People with rotten teeth that are getting health problems related to not having basic dental care even. As a society, I think we're paying the cost, but the insurance companies are in it for the short-term gain. We have many good examples around the world, and just to the north of us, we have an excellent example of countries where health is provided as a benefit, just like any other benefit, like fire protection, for example. But in our country, because of the quirk of the way health insurance was linked to jobs, you know, we're seeing the consequences now. I recently attended a meeting of the Physicians for National Health Program, and we had trade unionists that came from Canada and spoke, and they admitted that there are problems there. But when we compare the problems that they have to the problems that we have, there's no comparison, basically. We talk about waiting times there for procedures. Here, if you don't have money or insurance, you're just not going to be on any waiting list. But they're fighting to improve their system, whereas we're fighting to get a system. The rural areas have a particular problem because there's not the resources or the attention given to the rural poor, and especially migrants.
The Showtime television channel will be showing a film called Damaged Care, which exposes the cruelty of the corporate managed care health system.
This is a true life John Q situation. A very courageous physician named Linda Pino, who actually was involved in the case of a young man that was refused life-saving heart surgery because it would cost the Humana Corporation $500,000. Her situation is going to be discussed in this movie, basically with Laura Dern from Jurassic Park, who'll be playing the role of Linda Pino. This is a real exposition of the problems with health care in this country, because we have situations where people actually die so that the companies can make the profit. What was actually belittling was the fact that this company spent the same exact amount of money to have some kind of decoration for their reception area for their building.
What does Dr. Sandoval see as needing to happen so that people in the United States can have a more effective healthcare system?
This isn't going to be a top-down solution. And our politicians, I think, can play a role. Our Physicians for National Health Program can play a role. But I think when the average person on the street starts seeing that we've got to get together to make some political changes in this country, then it's going to happen. Because right now, it's being discussed. I think groups such as the group that I'm a part of can play very important roles in terms of getting this out into the to the limelight. But we need organizations, for example, like the Labor Party, that actively organize people and get them to promote this in the national conscience and get our people moving.
We'll take a brief break for station identification. This is People's Tribune Radio, and today we're taking a look at the organization that produces this radio program, the League of Revolutionaries for a New America. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. As an activist educational organization, the League operates a speakers bureau. It's called Speakers for a New America, and the name sums up the activities of the bureau. Sandy Reed coordinates Speakers for a New America.
I was very lucky to have an uncle who was involved in the labor movement and who brought some new ideas to me about the way that the world is and the way that it could be. From there, I was able to search out and find an organization of revolutionaries who believed the way that I did and who really wanted to devote their lives to bringing a vision of a new America to people. I work with our Speakers Bureau, which is Speakers for a New America. We include speakers who are League members and those who are not. The reason that I joined the Speakers Bureau and began to work with it was because I had heard our speakers and thought they had the most incredible message. Not only were they knowledgeable and informed, they were in the forefront of the struggle for a new world, and they had so much rich history to bring to people. So I wanted to work on this project to get their message out, to get them out to the campuses, to the communities, to every nook and cranny of America. Our sole purpose is to get our message out, not simply to raise funds. We do need to raise funds so that we can keep doing what we're doing. But again, our main purpose is to get this word out. So in many ways, we model ourselves around the abolitionists, where people traveled sometimes on foot, the ex-slaves, to speak to America about the evils of slavery and that slavery could end. We model ourselves on these great fighters. And that's why today, even today, we send our speakers out by Greyhound bus, by car, by plane, however they need to get there. Sometimes our speakers will even sleep on the floor just for the opportunity to be able to speak to people about what kind of world do you want to live in. We have many, many outstanding speakers. I'd like to tell you something about a few of them. Luis Rodriguez is probably our best-known speaker. He has emerged as a leading Latino writer in the country. He has 6 published books. His most recent work is called Hearts and Hands, Creating Community in Violent Times. This book has tapped a nerve in America. Everywhere Luis goes and people gather, whether they're teachers, students, parents, the discussions are lively and people leave feeling that there really is something that they can do about the terrible conditions that the youth face today. Another speaker is Maria Teixeira. She's an outstanding performer and activist who has won the Woman of the Year Award for her work with youth and immigrant families. Maria works with poor women and youth in the housing projects of East Los Angeles. She has been part of organizing many people to protest the poverty of the youth in that community. When Maria speaks to audiences, she tells them about her own personal experience of holding dying youth in her arms, bloody and full of gunshot wounds. She discusses with her audiences the causes of this situation, which she believes is solely the result of poverty. She believes that this country has plenty of resources, but the priorities center on what the wealthy need, not what the poor need. Another speaker is Jim Keady, who is the only sports person in the country who has publicly denounced Nike for their sweatshop policies, where women and children are working for a few cents an hour in deplorable working conditions throughout the world. Jim had the opportunity to become a soccer coach at a prestigious university. He had a bright career at his fingertips, but he found out that his university was promoting Nike on their campus, and he couldn't morally live with this. They told him if he didn't stop talking and speaking out about this, that he would be fired, and in fact, he was fired for his beliefs. Sherry Honkala is another great speaker that we have. She is the director of the Kensington Welfare Rights Union. She speaks all over the country describing the struggle of the poor in the United States. She herself is a symbol of the poor, organizing the poor to end poverty in America. She has been arrested over and over for protests, for speaking out. She has been invited to speak to the United Nations about poverty in the United States, where she was very well received. And also, she was recently invited internationally to India, where she spoke to farmers about the conditions here. Brenda Matthews is a poet with a message of hope. She lives on the West Side, which is a very poor part of Chicago. She is known as a social commentator, a social activist, and a soul-stirring minister for our time. Her performances, which are standing room only, inspire a commitment to build a society that cherishes all, a society that leaves no one behind. Another speaker in this series is Reverend Bruce Wright, who is the director of The Refuge, which is a church of the poor, the homeless, and the counterculture youth in Florida. Reverend Wright tells audiences that the essence of what Christianity is about is a cooperative society.
It's the stories of what's happening in America, not just the problems, but what people are doing to try and bring about real solutions. People struggling for justice and fairness, and in some cases fighting on behalf of the people who are too busy simply trying to survive from one day to the next to be able to fight for themselves. It's an effort to make some sense out of all the contradictions that we're faced with in daily life, helping to connect people and letting them know that they're not crazy and that they're not alone. Around the U.S., People's Tribune Television is starting to pop up on some local cable access television stations, and then there's People's Tribune Radio. PTR is airing relatively regularly on some 50 radio stations in the United States and internationally. For those of you who've been listening over the last 3 years, you know that we've been trying to bring these stories to the airwaves. And like the Speakers Bureau, it's not just members of the League of Revolutionaries for a New America who find their way onto People's Tribune Radio. Over the years, we've brought you Noam Chomsky, Howard Zinn, Michael Moore, Kevin Danaher, and Mumia Abu-Jamal. We've explored rap and revolution with Professor Griff and Michael Franti. We've looked at the economy, homelessness, and told you how school kids in Oakland, California were learning how to copyright their own DNA. Being a person who first and foremost loves radio and sees it as an important tool for the struggles that we all face, it's been my pleasure and honor to be part of helping to create People's Tribune Radio and helping to keep it on the air for all these years. I work as the Public Affairs Director for community radio station KVMR-FM in Nevada City, California. It was there that I first heard a speech by Nelson Peary. One of the things that I liked about Nelson, something that struck me immediately, was the fact that here was a guy who didn't BS around. He was telling the story about how he'd seen a homeless woman and her children standing outside of a shelter in the rain, waiting for the place to open. And then he dared anyone to justify how in a country as rich as the United States any such thing should be allowed to happen. The answer, of course, is simple. It can't be justified. I've done a lot of radio over the last 10 years or so, from interviewing Mumia Abu-Jamal on death row to covering the protest in Seattle at the World Trade Organization meetings. I've covered a lot of stories and talked with a lot of folks. And I've seen that the things that the League of Revolutionaries for a New America is talking about are very, very much true. A very small percentage of people are getting tremendously rich. for the majority of people, the standard of living is going down. More and more people are being permanently displaced from decent-paying jobs. What was once called the social safety net is being ripped to shreds. The agenda of the ruling class appears to be to privatize everything and then protect their interest by any means necessary, up to and including the creation of a fascist state. So when you see something wrong, you do whatever it is that you know how to do to try and make it right. And all of the things that I've said are the reasons that I work on People's Tribune Radio. But it's not the main reason. The main reason for me is that I have a granddaughter who's almost 7 years old, and I want to do whatever I can to help her to live in a world that's based on justice, fairness, decency, and compassion, not self-centeredness and greed. I certainly don't pretend to have all the answers, but I see millions of children growing up in a world where the rich will lock them out of everything. But not because they've done anything wrong and somehow deserve it, but because the economy, an economy that's based on private property and profit, has no use for them. Can anybody justify that in a world as rich as this world really is? I don't think so. Do you? That's it for this edition of People's Tribune Radio. We appreciate you staying tuned while we tried to give you a little bit of an idea about the organization that produces this radio program, the League of Revolutionaries for a New America. The League does advocate for a cooperative society where the tools of computerization and robotics that are currently being used to displace millions of workers around the world are in turn used for the benefit of humanity as a whole. If you'd like more information about the League, our other print or audio publications, or Speakers for a New America, you can contact us by calling 1-800-691-6888. 1-800-691-6888. Or on the internet at www.lrna.org. My name's Mike Thornton, and on behalf of the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, we invite you to join us next time for another edition of People's Tribune Radio.